Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following. The Able Trust, believing growth of Florida's economy depends on a diverse and inclusive workforce. The Able Trust works with the business community to include talented Floridians with disabilities as vital team members. More information is at abletrust.org. From the state capitol, WFSU Public Media brings you Capitol Report.
Governor Ron DeSantis has signed off on a $90 billion state budget.
I got more in the budget than any most first-year governors. And so, you know, if I had not been as successful, there probably would have been more projects in there that I would have vetoed.
Suspended Broward Sheriff Scott Israel appeals to get his job back.
I'm committed to fulfilling my term and not vacating my responsibility to the people in Broward County, to the community that I serve.
And the number of school districts with armed personnel other than law enforcement nears a majority. Plus, e-scooters could be coming to sidewalks, roads, and bike lanes in cities near you. I'm Lynn Hatter, and welcome to Capitol Report. Governor Ron DeSantis has signed off on the state's $90.9 billion budget. Sean Mulcahy has more.
DeSantis carved out more than $131 million in line item vetoes, and the state's reserves total nearly $5.4 billion. Despite that, the spending plan still tops out as Florida's largest ever. DeSantis is touting record environmental funding and an increase of nearly $250 in per student education money.
It is the highest amount that we've ever funded education in the state of Florida, increase per student $242. Which is the largest increase, I think, since 2013, $75 base student allocation increase. I think last year was like 10 cents.
However, the budget sweeps money from the state's Affordable Housing Trust Fund. DeSantis' original proposal in January called for fully funding the trust. DeSantis says the sweep is much smaller than in previous years and highlights other efforts to boost affordable housing.
Yeah, I mean, obviously we put it in there. That went back and forth. I think that we got much more than last year on it, but at the same time, it's like it was a very, very successful budget, and so, you know, you got to pick some of these battles.
In all, DeSantis used his veto power with a relatively light hand. He says that's largely because lawmakers gave him what he wanted.
I got more in the budget than any most first-year governors, and so, you know, if I had not been as successful, there probably would have been more projects in there that I would have vetoed.
Lawmakers approved a record $91.1 billion budget, just shy of DeSantis' $91.3 billion proposal. But DeSantis says it's about more than the total cost. He highlighted certain member projects that he says the government just doesn't have any business funding.
I considered a number of factors. I mean, one, obviously, there's certain things government just shouldn't do at all. Certain things that I think have merit but are clearly a local responsibility. We also have, in certain areas, certain processes that go by, whether it's for land acquisition or affordable housing. Then there were some things that some of the ideas were decent, but I didn't think they were likely to be effective.
Nonprofit budget watchdog group Florida Tax Watch urged DeSantis to veto with a, quote, light touch. The group found 109 budget turkeys or appropriations projects that weren't fully vetted by the legislature. Here's Tax Watch CEO Dominic Calabro.
It's still a significant amount of money that could have been spent in areas such as early education. That $133 million could have been spent additionally in classrooms, whether it's charter or public classrooms, hurricane recovery, service for children, the elderly, those special needs, and even some cases, tax cuts, particularly communication service tax, which affect the most everybody, and especially the poor, more harshly than others.
A number of state agency heads released statements praising the governor's budget. Meanwhile, in a statement, Senate President Bill Galvano said that while he doesn't agree with every decision, quote, it is clear that Governor DeSantis takes his responsibility very seriously. I'm Sean Mulcahy.
Suspended Broward County Sheriff Scott Israel has gone before the Senate special master in his appeal hearing. Ryan Daly reports Israel pointed to Governor Ron DeSantis' allegations of incompetence on the job as political.
Facing questions from his own attorney and the governor's counsel, Israel defended his job performance leading up to the February 2018 shooting at Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School.
Why are you challenging the governor's decision to suspend you?
Well, it's the wrong decision. I'm committed to fulfilling my term and not vacating my responsibility to the people in Broward County, to the community that I serve and fell in love with.
That's Israel answering his lawyer, Ben Cuney. In an effort to disprove DeSantis's allegations of incompetence and negligence, Cuney painted the governor's actions as political in nature.
There is a distinct difference between neglect of duty, obligations required by law, and those set by the position of office, and whim or fancy on the part of a politician.
But Nicholas Primrose, the governor's lawyer, says Israel failed to properly train his deputies, particularly when it came to the frequency of planning for active shooter scenarios.
But unlike SWAT officers, who are supposed to engage in active shooter situations and undergo training multiple times a month, Scott Israel's deputies assigned to schools were not keeping their skills sharp on a monthly, bi-monthly, quarterly, or even semi-annual basis.
Israel, answering questions from Primrose, said staffing shortages played a role.
Law enforcement, there are many vacant positions. So if you can't fill vacancies on an agency, there's a lot of training that you can't do or do it as often as you want because you can't leave the road or the community short of police officers.
Primrose also grilled Israel about the reporting mechanisms for intelligence that may set off red flags about a potential school shooting. Israel defended protocol used by his agency.
You did not train them that if they get information about a school shooting, it should go immediately to the top, not fill out an incident report that then goes to their supervisor and through a list of commands. It is a dead stop right to the top.
I don't know of any agency in the United States of America who has that protocol in place.
Over the two-day hearing, Senate Special Master Dudley Goodlett heard Israel and several former Broward Sheriff's deputies field questions. Goodlett will now draft a report on the hearing and give it over to the Senate for a vote. There was one answer from Israel that caught the governor's ear. It came when Israel was addressing former Deputy Scott Peterson, who was recently arrested for failing to act during the Parkland High School shooting.
So I was responsible for his inactions that day, and as soon as I saw that video, being a tactical officer myself, I suspended him, ordered an internal affairs investigation, and was ready to wait for the results and take action.
DeSantis responded to Israel's remarks while fielding questions from reporters Friday.
I was surprised, though, that he did indicate that he's responsible. He had not been willing to say that previously. His initial comment was, you know, I give someone a gun and a badge, they do with it what they will. I'm not responsible. So the fact that he admitted responsibility, I think, really justified my decision.
Ultimately, DeSantis, like Israel and everyone else, will have to wait and see how the Senate votes.
This has been an extremely lengthy process. I mean, they've gone and tried to litigate, obviously unsuccessfully. Now we're doing the Senate process, so there'll be folks that are going to vote on it, and, you know, they can vote how they want.
During the hearing, Israel said regardless of the Senate's decision, he will be running for sheriff of Broward County again. I'm Ryan Daly.
The Florida Department of Education recently announced the addition of three more school districts to the state's Guardian program. It's been controversial from the start. Opponents have mostly worried about the idea of people other than law enforcement officials having the ability to carry guns in schools. But not all districts are carrying out the program the way most people think. The state created the Guardian program following the Parkland shooting, where 17 people died and another 17 were injured. It's named for Aaron Feist, the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas coach who risked his life to save those of his students. When it was first created, the program allowed districts to designate people in addition to law enforcement officers to carry guns on campus. This year, it expanded, allowing teachers to participate. But many districts are sticking to the original version of the program. Duval County County Schools was among the first to sign up. Sister station WJCT in Jacksonville reported the district elected to hire personnel called school safety assistants to carry it out. Here's former Duval School Board Chairwoman Paula Wright.
We feel that because the safety school assistants will be primarily concerned with monitoring and patrolling our perimeter, we're taking greater stance to ensure that as soon as we suspect someone is doing something nefarious, we have somebody that can react to that.
The Florida Department of Education recently announced St. Johns County, Citrus, and Gadsden County schools have signed up as well. St. Johns and Gadsden County superintendents have promised not to arm teachers. Instead, they're going the way of Duval, and in the case of Gadsden County, building out the program in a way the state initially envisioned.
Private security companies could also participate in the guardian program with the appropriate guardian training by our sheriff's office, as well as designated individuals who apply to be strictly a guardian under the school district.
That's Gadsden Sheriff's Department Captain Bobby Collins, who's overseeing the county's guardian program.
I know what they're going to be, how they're going to be trained. I know the curriculum. I'm responsible for the training, so I take ownership of that. And we're not going to give anybody guardianship. They're going to earn it. And we're not going to put anybody out there or certify anybody who we don't think has met the mandate to be a guardian.
Collins says most applicants so far have been former military, law enforcement, and security guards. And he adds it makes financial sense for Gadsden to use guardians instead of school resource officers, which are usually sworn law enforcement.
State has provided this funding, so why not maximize it? And it's very expensive to just hire school resource deputies. Then you have to train them. They have to go through a normal field training officer program, which is about 12 weeks where they ride with another deputy. So that's another 3 months that you won't be able to use that individual.
The state has subsidized both SROs and guardians, but guardians cost less and districts can decide how to pay them. In Duval County, guardians are paid about $12.50 an hour. The addition of three more school districts to the guardian program means nearly half of those in the state have signed up, and the Florida Department of Education anticipates another 15 more will likely follow. That would be a majority of districts planning for armed security personnel, including teachers, administrators, law enforcement officers, and others carrying guns in schools. But there are still hidden costs, says outgoing Leon County Schools Chief Financial Officer Merrill Wimberly. Chief among them, insurance, liability, and benefits.
In my opinion, if you're going to do all that, they should get the same consideration as a law enforcement officer, and we'd have to pay a higher amount to the FRS because they would be an at-risk kind of person. In my opinion. I mean, if I'm going to walk around with a dadgum gun and have to protect children, I'm suddenly like a law enforcement officer.
Leon County Superintendent Rocky Hanna has sworn off the Guardian program in any form. The district has partnered with the Sheriff's Department to keep deputies in its schools, but Leon and other holdouts could soon find themselves in the minority of districts with that stance. I'm Len Hatter. Still to come on Capitol Report, cities approve e-scooters, but are the mobile machines more hazard than help?
It'll be fascinating to look at the data and see how many people are using the scooters as a true transportation unit.
Lawmakers say gas pump stickers should not be political, but Agriculture Commissioner Nikki Fried's smiling face will remain up.
It makes me think that the pumps are getting checked and I'm getting my money's worth.
And Democrats are hoping to make climate change part of the 2020 political conversation.
What we see in Florida is our cities champion this effort in a much more aggressive and impactful way compared to the state of Florida.
You're listening to Capitol Report from WFSU Public Media. I'm Len Hatter. Next time you get gas, you might see Agriculture Commissioner Nikki Fried's smiling face at the pump. Fried's stickers have stirred up some controversy, but she says she plans to keep them in place. Regan McCarthy has more.
The new stickers are a change from the old decals former Agriculture Commissioner Adam Putnam used, which featured the Florida Department of Agriculture's logo. Freed says the new sticker is intended to attract attention and raise awareness about fraud at the gas pump.
People are being aware of the situation that there's a consumer fraud hotline out there, and hopefully people will see the sticker, notice them, because most people in the state of Florida didn't even know there was a sticker on the gas station pumps until this change happened.
Makes me think that the pumps are getting checked and I'm getting my money's worth.
That's Wayne Salvis. He stopped at a Tallahassee gas station to top off his tank, and he agrees with Freed. He says he hasn't really noticed the stickers before, but now that he has, he's glad to know who's in charge.
Something goes happening, somebody might say, hey, we know who this woman is, and go chase her down or something, you know? I don't think it's promoting anything, no. It's just showing that she's the one taking care of the business.
And Freed says that's exactly her goal. Her inspectors have placed new decals on thousands of pumps across the state so far.
When our inspectors went out to sweep all the skimmers across the state, our stickers have been placed up there so the consumers understand when they see fraud happening at the pumps, they know exactly who to call, both in English and in Spanish.
During conference negotiations on the budget, the Republican-controlled legislature added language to the implementing bill that limits gas pump stickers to using letters, numbers, and the department's logo. The bill goes into effect July 1st, but Freed points out that language pertains specifically to the budget and spending. Freed says she plans to leave the stickers she has in place, but says she'll follow the rules by not purchasing new ones. Senate Appropriations Chairman Rob Bradley told reporters following the close of the legislative session that the move was not directed specifically toward Freed, the only Democrat on the Florida cabinet.
It's not meant to be disrespectful or a shot at any one individual or any groups of individuals. It's just, good public policy.
Bradley says he thinks it's important to ensure all official notices are purely focused on business. I'm Regan McCarthy.
Governor Ron DeSantis recently approved giving e-scooter riders the same rights as bicyclists. Now cities across Florida are implementing e-scooter programs, but Robbie Gaffney tells us those programs are not without concerns.
Tampa City Council implemented an e-scooter pilot program on Memorial Day weekend. Tampa's Director of Transportation, Gene Duncan, says the city is analyzing complaints to see what can be improved.
We've had complaints about for example, people stepping out onto a sidewalk and having a scooter whiz by, of complaints about the scooters being in some of the off-limits areas.
But Duncan says there's been positives as well.
We're also seeing people in business suits or even dresses clearly going to a meeting, from one place to the next. So we're hoping this has a real transportation value.
Tallahassee will also be starting an e-scooter pilot program soon.
We know that there will be issues. We've seen them in other communities.
City Commissioner Jeremy Matlow is referring to the pilot.
We're watching to see who's going to mess up first so we can find the companies that work best with our community.
The City Commission added two more vendors, Bird and Spin, to its e-scooter program. While Commissioner Matlow expressed concerns during a recent City Commission meeting, he says his support stems from a shortage of alternative transit for Tallahasseans.
We need to be building infrastructure for all types of transportation. For a long time, we've really subsidized car transportation above all else. So maybe this pilot program will help us identify problems on our sidewalks or the way we're building streets to make sure we're more commuter friendly.
There are now 5 e-scooter vendors slated to participate in the pilot. Before, the commission decided on a maximum of 3, Gotcha, ViaRide, and Lime. The commission increased the number because it plans to eliminate any vendors who don't follow the rules. In the words of City Commissioner Diane Williams-Cox,
may the best scooter win.
Riders access the scooters by downloading an app on their smartphone. Mayor John Daly says city staff will study data collected from these apps.
It'll be fascinating. It'll be fascinating to look at the data and see how many people are using the scooters as a true transportation unit.
Daly continues.
It'll be interesting to see the usage patterns from point A to point B, the usage routes, what roads are they taking. The frequency of usage in particular parts of town, or are they using them more than other places in town? And if we are collecting the data to see age-wise who are using the scooters as well.
Gotcha is one of the vendors chosen for the pilot. Founder and CEO Sean Flood says the data his company collects on riders will remain anonymous.
We do want users to feel comfortable that they can use shared mobility devices, assuming that they're following the rules.
Flood says his company does not sell to third parties, but it will share data with cities it partners with.
So we do share data around user behavior openly with those partners.
The partners in this case would be the city of Tallahassee.
Now that is, again, non-specific user data, so nobody could know that Sean Flood rides a scooter from A to B, but they do know that a user goes from A to B on that product.
Data is already being collected in Tampa, but the city's Gene Duncan says it's too early to tell if the scooters are a positive or a negative. Her advice to Tallahassee is,
looking to see if you have the option to customize where you want them within your city, what makes sense. Be really sensitive to very high pedestrian areas because we already have challenges between bicyclists and pedestrians. The scooter just adds one more complexity to that.
Duncan says she's advocating for safety and personal responsibility when it comes to e-scooters. City and County Transportation Planner Julie Christensen says the next steps are reaching out to the invited vendors and creating an agreement. The program plans to go live July 15th. If the program is successful, the commission could vote to extend it past 3 months, and more vehicles like e-bikes could be included. I'm Robbie Gaffney.
The nonprofit Triumph Gulf Coast is setting aside funds it hopes will help Panhandle students soar. Blaise Ganey reports a new drone program has been approved by the board.
Wakulla County Schools will soon be getting a new program they hope will help get their students into the workforce after graduation. Sunny Chansey is the county's chief academic officer.
What we aim to do is to train our students grades 9 through 12 in general aviation, help them understand what airspace looks like, what maps look like, and then give them the tools that they need in order to fly not only mid-level but high-level drones and then get certified in the drone flying with the potential of hopefully moving into the workforce or post-secondary education in order to enhance their skills and then get a high-wage, high-skill job.
Former Senator Don Gates chairs Triumph Gulf Coast. He says the nonprofit group is funding the project because board members think it has great potential.
If we don't have a qualified workforce, then we will not be able to really have the economic growth that we're trying to achieve. So a critical foundation piece in everything Triumph Gulf Coast is doing is making sure that we support a qualified workforce. And that means industry certifications.
Triumph's education and workforce advisor, Frank Fuller, says the unmanned drone program will help students get those certifications.
The key to the training here is this is the same training these kids are going to get that adults get. It's FAA approved, it's high end, they have to take a test and pass it in order to get certified.
Fuller says he has already identified jobs where drones are used.
The easiest example with this hurricane, State Farm and several agencies, they had to retrain all their people coming down here to use drones or they'd have never got their job done.
State Farm and other insurance companies use drones to check roofs for damage after hurricanes. Emergency management crews also use drones to identify damage and pathways that may be cut off instead of sending people out into possible danger. And Chansey says the program could open the door for other potential jobs.
The intent is to get them started in the drone project and then hopefully light a fire. So if they would like to move forward, commercial pilot, maybe maintenance of aircrafts, then they would have the potential, the background, and the know-how.
Chansey says so far, Triumph has been a huge help in getting the county prepared to offer the new program to students.
Triumph Gulf Coast has been instrumental in allowing us to purchase some of the drones, to train the teachers. We're doing not only the drone technology program in our secondary schools, but we're also doing the information computer technology program in our primary grades to help expose the students to the curriculum that they're going to need to take those higher level certifications when they get into secondary school.
The drone certification program is expected to cost $1,780,000. During the meeting, the board also approved a welding program for a high school in Gulf County. Triumph Gulf Coast is charged with distributing settlement money to the 8 North Florida counties impacted by the BP oil spill. The funds are to be used for recovery and enhancement. For WFSU News, I'm Blaise Ganey.
And finally tonight, as Democratic presidential candidates set their sights on Miami for the first round of debates, Florida lawmakers championing climate change awareness held a press conference voicing the importance of taking the issue seriously. Kevin DelOrbe explains.
On a press call Friday morning, Democratic leaders pushed their effort to make Florida 100% based on renewable energy. Congresswoman Kathy Castor joined the call, and she says she wants to see the state adopt cleaner energy goals.
Most states have set clean energy and conservation goals. Unfortunately, Florida has not.
Castor is chair of the Select Committee on Climate Crisis, and she says making the switch to renewable energy plays an important part in Florida's future.
We're fortunate, though, because we can turn this challenge into an opportunity to transition to a clean energy economy.
Also on the call was state lawmaker Orlando Representative Anna Escamani, who sponsored Bill HB 1291, which would have mandated the state to create a plan on how to get Florida to the 100% renewable energy standard.
And unless we can find new sources of energy and really put a plan in place to get there, the crisis is only going to continue.
Escamani's bill died in its first committee. The Orlando Democrat says cities are taking the lead when it comes to creating renewable energy goals.
Local cities have been the champions on this issue in Florida, and that's absolutely grounded in the fact that there's been inaction from the state of Florida.
Seven cities in Florida have committed to becoming 100% based on renewable energy, with Tallahassee being the latest city to make the pledge.
Our city commission has made it one of our priorities to be a leader in the field of sustainability.
The city of Tallahassee recently adopted a clean energy resolution. And City Commissioner Curtis Richardson says the state is looking at all sectors as opportunity to reduce emissions.
Our electric utility has reduced its emissions. Our Star Metro, which is our city mass transit system, is in the process of purchasing 15 new all-electric buses, and those will service the Florida State University campus. And that means that one-third of the city's daily bus fleet at that point will be electric.
Tallahassee's clean energy resolution includes a 100% electric bus fleet, pledging to make the switch no later than 2035. Richardson says state lawmakers should look at local municipalities who've been leaders in the sustainable conversation.
We started those initiatives years ago, and I think it has contributed to the quality of life that we enjoy here in Tallahassee, and I would hope that the state would look at what we've done and take those kinds of goals, those clean environment goals, to a state level.
Other cities adopting renewable energy standards include Orlando, Sarasota, and St. Petersburg. Climate change will be a topic when presidential candidates debate in Miami on June 26th. Lawmakers like Congresswoman Castor and Representative Escamani want more action on the state and federal level to reduce emissions. Advocates are hopeful local governments like Tallahassee can provide the blueprint. I'm Kevin DelOrbe.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Ryan Daly, Blaze Ganey, Gina Jordan, Regan McCarthy, and Sean Mulcahy. Technical assistance for Capitol Report is provided by Ken Smith, and I'm Lynn Hatter. Tom Flanagan will be back next week. Join us each Friday for more reports from the state capitol.
Capitol Report is a production of WFSU Public Media in Tallahassee. For more information about Capitol Report and to hear previous episodes, visit WFSU.org. Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following: The Able Trust, dedicated to connecting businesses and workers with disabilities. Businesses are encouraged to recruit, interview, and hire talented and loyal Floridians with disabilities as they seek to broaden their customer base and reach all of Florida's diverse population. Abletrust.org.